You are on an inpatient medicine shift and are about to see Jasper Thomas on morning rounds. He is a 32-year-old man admitted yesterday from the emergency department with fever, rash, fatigue, and shortness of breath. On admission, the team noted a heart murmur. When he takes a deep breath or raises his legs, his murmur becomes louder. Also of note, he presents with an elevated white blood cell count and positive blood cultures showing gram-positive cocci in clusters. The team suspects infectious endocarditis. On this morning's exam, his temperature is 103.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and you hear a holosystolic murmur at the fourth intercostal space along the left parasternal border. As you consider his case, you wonder, what is the physiologic basis for his murmur and the changes that occur with inspiration and leg raising? And what treatment would you recommend? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to AudioBricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears.
But first, a quick shout out to the learning platform that makes AudioBricks possible, the RX Bricks, which is the source of all content you hear in this podcast. And if you've been holding off on checking this out, well, now we're running a promotion where you can get a full Bricks subscription for 50% off using the code RXPOD. That's RXPOD, you know, like the RX Podcast. The link to the Bricks is in the show notes, along with the promo code. Forgot it already.
After completing this episode, you will be able to, first, describe the causes, pathophysiology, clinical presentation, diagnosis, and management of tricuspid regurgitation. And second, describe the causes, pathophysiology, clinical presentation, diagnosis, and management of tricuspid stenosis. Part 1. What are the tricuspid valve diseases? Many well-known valve diseases occur in the left side of the heart. In this episode, we'll be discussing diseases affecting the tricuspid valve, located in the right side of the heart. Even though pressures within the right side of the heart are not as strong as the right heart is critical in draining blood from the venous system and in getting it to the lungs, so tricuspid disease can cause a number of symptoms and lead to significant complications if not managed. Let's begin. Part 2. Tricuspid regurgitation. Tricuspid regurgitation is the most common right heart valve abnormality. It is due to backflow or retrograde flow of blood through an abnormally functioning or insufficient tricuspid valve, such that blood leaks from the right ventricle back up into the right atrium. Because the right heart is a low-pressure chamber, mild to moderate tricuspid regurgitation is usually silent and asymptomatic. Severe regurgitation, on the other hand, commonly presents with right heart failure. Tricuspid regurgitation is less common than aortic stenosis or aortic regurgitation, and likewise less common as mitral regurgitation, with an annual incidence of less than 1%. The most common cause of tricuspid regurgitation is secondary to failure of the right heart. Right heart failure can lead to dilation of the right ventricle and insufficiency of the tricuspid valve, leading to regurgitation of the tricuspid valve. For example, in children or young adults with congenital heart disease, the congenital malformation that leads to right-sided heart failure may account for the cause. Like the old chicken versus the egg dilemma, a diagnostic issue we face here is which came first, the tricuspid regurgitation or the right ventricular dilation. Therefore, we categorize causes of tricuspid regurgitation based on the initial event. Those that cause regurgitation first are called primary tricuspid regurgitation. Those that cause right ventricular dilation first and then lead to regurgitation second are called secondary tricuspid regurgitation. It is important to make this distinction because primary tricuspid regurgitation is managed differently from secondary tricuspid regurgitation. Later on in our discussion, you will see that in addition to treating the abnormal valve and its complications, the underlying causes of secondary tricuspid regurgitation have specific treatments too. Like I said earlier, most cases of tricuspid regurgitation present clinically without symptoms. Patients with severe regurgitation, though, may complain of symptoms of right heart failure, such as fatigue, a distended abdomen from ascites, symptoms of leg swelling due to edema, and early satiety due to an enlarged liver. Other symptoms may be related to the specific causes of the tricuspid regurgitation. For instance, fever may accompany infective endocarditis, and breathing difficulties may accompany left-sided heart failure. Let's pause briefly for a quick question break. Why is differentiating primary and secondary causes of tricuspid regurgitation important? Primary and secondary tricuspid regurgitation are managed differently, so differentiating them is important. Okay, now let's talk specifically about primary tricuspid regurgitation. Diseases that directly damage or disrupt the function of the tricuspid valve may prevent its proper closure, leading to primary tricuspid regurgitation. Congenital defects may be a cause. Specifically, Epstein anomaly is a congenital defect that results in the abnormal positioning and functioning of the tricuspid valve. The tricuspid valve sits lower or more inferiorly than normal in the right ventricle in Epstein anomaly. Also, because of abnormal functioning of the valves, blood regurgitates and leaks back from the right ventricle back up into the right atrium. This causes right atrial dilation and may lead to increasing right atrial pressures and shunting of blood from the right atrium to the left atrium through the foramen ovale. Next is infective endocarditis. In this case, bacteria, for example, Staphylococcus aureus, colonizes, vegetates on, and damages the valve. Infective endocarditis often presents with fever and signs of an acute inflammatory response, exactly like our patient, Jasper Thomas. Infective endocarditis is the most common cause of tricuspid regurgitation in individuals who use injectable drugs, and tricuspid regurgitation is the most common valve disease associated with infective endocarditis. So this may be an important part of the history we should reassess in Mr. Thomas. Other causes may include direct trauma to the valve, including blunt chest trauma, and iatrogenic causes such as open heart surgery or pacemaker leads traveling through the tricuspid orifice. One last cause is carcinoid syndrome, which is when high level of serotonin induces fibrous tissue deposition on the heart valves. The right heart is more affected because the lung inactivates the vasoactive substances before they can cause left heart damage. In primary tricuspid regurgitation, eventually there is volume overload on the right side of the heart. This is due to increased preload, or venous return, from the regurgitant backflow. This backflow increases the volume and pressure of blood in the right atrium and the venous system. It also causes volume overload of the right ventricle, since that chamber must now accommodate both the already increased venous return as well as the return of extra regurgitant blood from the right atrium. This causes the right ventricle to progressively dilate until it loses its pumping ability, resulting in right-sided heart failure. Before we move on to secondary tricuspid regurgitation, let's take a quick question break. What is the most common cause of tricuspid regurgitation in patients who use injectable drugs? The answer is infective endocarditis. Moving on to secondary tricuspid regurgitation, here the pathophysiology begins with a dilated right ventricle from any cause of right-sided heart failure. The progressively dilating right ventricle eventually prevents a structurally normal tricuspid valve from closing. This may result from either a decreased pumping ability of the right ventricle or increased resistance to blood ejection out of the ventricle. The volume overload dilates the ventricle, stretches the tricuspid valvular ring, and prevents proper closure of the valve leaflets. Let's break down the causes further into two pathophysiologic frameworks. First, there could be loss of right ventricular myocytes, for example, from infarction or cardiomyopathy. Or alternatively, there could be increased pulmonary artery pressure or pulmonary hypertension, and this will increase resistance to the ejection of blood from the right ventricle. Pulmonary hypertension may be caused by primary lung diseases, such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or left heart disease and left heart failure. Phew! Before moving on, one more time, let's sum up the causes of primary and secondary tricuspid regurgitation. Primary tricuspid regurgitation is due to direct dysfunction or damage to the valve, preventing valve closure, and the causes include congenital anomalies, infective endocarditis, blunt trauma, iatrogenic injury, or carcinoid syndrome. Secondary tricuspid regurgitation is from right ventricular dysfunction or failure, which stretches the tricuspid valve ring, preventing valve closure, and causes include left-sided heart failure, primary lung disease, right ventricular infarction, and dilated cardiomyopathy. Now that we've discussed the causes, pathophysiology, and clinical presentation of tricuspid regurgitation, let's move on to some of its complications. Let's focus on patients with severe regurgitation, since those with mild to moderate conditions generally do well and are asymptomatic. Severe tricuspid regurgitation can be pretty serious, though. Because the right atrium is getting dilated and stretched, it may lead to disruption of the normal conduction pathways within the heart and atrial fibrillation. And of course, we've already discussed the other serious complication of tricuspid regurgitation, that is, right heart failure and volume overload. A diagnosis of tricuspid regurgitation is best confirmed through physical exam and imaging. A systolic murmur is often the earliest physical exam finding identified in tricuspid regurgitation. You may hear the high-pitched, holosystolic blowing murmur of tricuspid regurgitation at the fourth intercostal space along the left parasternal border. Murmurs become louder if more blood flows through the orifice of the defective valve. Therefore, maneuvers that increase blood flow to the right heart, like leg raising and deep inspiration, make right heart murmurs louder. Standing makes the murmurs softer by decreasing venous return to the heart. You may also hear a loud S2 due to pulmonary hypertension. Notably, an important diagnostic pearl is that the murmurs of tricuspid regurgitation and ventricular septal defect are both holosystolic murmurs best heard at the tricuspid region. Again, maneuvers like leg raising and standing help to tell them apart. The murmur of tricuspid regurgitation becomes louder with leg raising, while that of ventricular septal defect becomes softer. The opposite occurs when the patient is standing. Another physical exam finding associated with tricuspid regurgitation is a characteristic change in the jugular venous wave form. The waves represent increased jugular venous pressure, while the descents represent decreased pressure. Normally, there are transient increases of the jugular venous pressure during atrial contraction and ventricular contraction, with a decrease in pressure during relaxation period, which is between contractions. Tricuspid regurgitation allows retrograde blood flow into the atrium during ventricular contraction, which eliminates the descent or decrease in jugular venous pressure during atrial relaxation, but causes giant waves or increases in pressure during ventricular contraction as the atrium fills with blood from both the veins and the right ventricle. This change in waveform pattern can be identified by monitoring jugular venous pulsations on physical exam. Let's review this concept one more time with a question break. How can the jugular venous waveform help diagnose tricuspid regurgitation? Tricuspid regurgitation allows retrograde blood flow into the atrium during ventricular contraction, which eliminates the pressure descent of atrial relaxation, but causes the giant pressure increases during ventricular contraction because the atrium is filling with blood from both the veins and the right ventricle. Lastly, patients with more advanced and severe tricuspid regurgitation may show signs of right heart failure on physical exam. This may include an S3 sound on auscultation of the heart and a right ventricular heave on palpation. Congestion increases right heart pressure, impeding venous return and resulting in the backup of blood within the veins, manifesting as jugular venous distension, hepatomegaly, ascites, and a hepatojugular reflux due to liver congestion, as well as lower extremity edema due to congested lower extremity veins. Diagnostic imaging studies may also assist in the diagnosis of right heart failure from tricuspid regurgitation. For example, a chest X-ray may show evidence of a dilated right atrium. Ultimately, the diagnosis is confirmed with echocardiography showing the retrograde flow of blood through the tricuspid valve during right ventricular contraction. In cases of infectious endocarditis, the echocardiogram may also demonstrate vegetations on the tricuspid valve. The goal of management is first to treat the complications of severe tricuspid regurgitation and prevent progression. This can be done medically or surgically. Medical treatment is focused on decreasing venous return to the right heart. This is done with fluid and salt restriction and with diuretics. Secondary causes of tricuspid regurgitation should be treated as well. In patients with pulmonary hypertension, dilating the pulmonary artery can be done with agents such as endothelin receptor blockers, for example, bosentan, phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors, for example, sildenafil, and prostacyclin analogs, for example, epoprostenol. Additionally, for patients with infective endocarditis, antibiotics are an essential therapy. Lastly, patients with atrial fibrillation may be treated with calcium channel blockers or beta blockers coupled with anticoagulants to prevent thrombi from forming in the heart. Surgical therapy, such as tricuspid valve replacement or repair, is most often done when right heart failure progresses despite adequate medical treatment, as we just discussed. Part 3, tricuspid stenosis. In contrast to tricuspid regurgitation, tricuspid stenosis occurs when the tricuspid valve is too thick and stiff to open completely during diastole. A stiff tricuspid valve will not open completely during diastole when the right ventricle is relaxed. The narrowed orifice impedes the flow of blood from the right atrium into the right ventricle, increasing the pressure within the right atrium and the vena cava. The right atrium becomes dilated because it is contracting against greater resistance. Tricuspid stenosis is rare, occurring in less than 1% of patients, and it's most often found together with other valvular abnormalities in the setting of systemic diseases such as rheumatic heart disease. As with tricuspid regurgitation, many patients with tricuspid stenosis of mild to moderate changes are usually asymptomatic and have an excellent prognosis. Patients with more severe disease may present with palpitations, fatigue, and cold skin due to low cardiac output. Left heart failure may occur because of low preload, which is from poor left-sided filling because of the stenosis, or because of concurrent mitral or aortic valve disease. The most common cause of tricuspid stenosis is rheumatic heart disease. This causes a chronic inflammatory injury with subsequent fibrosis of the tricuspid valve. A rare cause like carcinoid syndrome results in both tricuspid stenosis and regurgitation through serotonin-induced fibrosis of the valve. Other uncommon causes include right-sided cardiac tumors, such as an atrial myxoma that blocks the orifice of the valve, and other rheumatologic conditions, for example, systemic lupus erythematosus. This is associated with non-bacterial thrombotic endocarditis. As with tricuspid regurgitation, the diagnosis of tricuspid stenosis is made with a combination of physical exam findings and imaging. Murmurs caused by tricuspid stenosis may be difficult to distinguish from murmurs of co-occurring valve abnormalities, such as aortic regurgitation. This is because these are both diastolic murmurs best heard at the fourth intercostal space at the left parasternal border. The murmur of tricuspid stenosis begins with an opening snap, followed by a soft mid-diastolic rumble with presystolic accentuation, while that of aortic regurgitation is a soft decrescendo murmur. Inspiration and leg raising make the murmur of tricuspid stenosis louder because these maneuvers increase venous return, increasing flow through the valve, whereas in contrast, standing makes the tricuspid stenosis murmur softer. As with tricuspid regurgitation, examining the jugular venous pressure waveform may help you differentiate tricuspid stenosis from other conditions. In tricuspid stenosis, you will see a giant A wave representing increased venous pressure during atrial contraction because the atrium is contracting against a narrowed tricuspid valve. Another physical exam phenomena that may be present in tricuspid stenosis is the Kussmaul sign. In normal patients, the jugular venous pressure decreases with inspiration as blood flows into the right heart from the veins. Patients with tricuspid stenosis may instead show no decrease or even a paradoxical increase in jugular venous pressure during inspiration, which is called the Kussmaul sign. This is because the venous blood cannot rapidly enter the right heart because of the increased pressure in the right atrium. This sign can be seen in tricuspid stenosis, but is also seen in many other conditions, including tricuspid regurgitation, constrictive pericarditis, and restrictive cardiomyopathy. In severe tricuspid stenosis, you'll also find signs of right heart failure as described for tricuspid regurgitation, such as jugular venous distension, hepatomegaly, and edema. Note that unlike in tricuspid regurgitation, in tricuspid stenosis, we may see some signs of right heart failure, but without actual failure, that is, a normal right ventricular contractility. These signs occur because of the valvular stenosis causing high pressure in the right atrium and the systemic veins, even with a functioning right ventricle. Imaging, in particular echocardiography, confirms the diagnosis. It will show a narrowed tricuspid orifice, decreased valve mobility, atrial dilation, and slow filling of the right ventricle. Right ventricular size and thickness may typically be normal. Question break. How can we differentiate tricuspid stenosis from other conditions with a jugular venous tracing? In tricuspid stenosis, the jugular venous tracing shows a giant A wave because the atrium is contracting against a narrowed orifice. Similar to tricuspid regurgitation, medical therapy is directed toward treating symptoms of right heart failure, treating the associated complications, and treating the underlying cause of the stenosis. Congestive symptoms are treated with fluid and salt restriction and with diuretics. Beta blockers might also help with low cardiac output by prolonging diastole and enhancing cardiac filling. For patients with atrial fibrillation, this may be treated with calcium channel blockers or beta blockers coupled with anticoagulants to prevent thrombi from forming in the heart. In patients with rheumatic heart disease, penicillin is recommended for secondary prevention of Streptococcus pyogenes reinfection. As with tricuspid regurgitation, valve repair or replacement is reserved for patients with refractory stenosis. In patients with severe refractory stenosis, but without other indications for open heart surgery, percutaneous balloon valvotomy may also dilate the orifice of the tricuspid valve. And that's all I have today for tricuspid valve disorders. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. First, can you describe the causes and pathophysiology of tricuspid regurgitation? Common causes of tricuspid regurgitation include primary causes, such as infectious endocarditis and congenital abnormalities, or secondary causes, such as those secondary to right heart failure and pulmonary hypertension. Tricuspid regurgitation causes volume overload of the right heart, which, if severe and untreated, leads to a dilated right ventricle and right heart failure. Now, can you describe the clinical presentation, diagnosis, and management of tricuspid regurgitation? Mild to moderate tricuspid regurgitation is usually asymptomatic, whereas severe regurgitation presents with signs of right heart failure. Diagnosis is made through identifying the characteristic murmur on physical exam, which increases with inspiration or laying down, or more nuanced changes to the jugular venous waveform. Treatment is largely medical therapy geared to improving the volume overload, such as fluid and salt restriction and diuretics. Tricuspid valve replacement is indicated for patients who do not respond to medical management alone. Next, can you describe the causes and pathophysiology of tricuspid stenosis? Tricuspid stenosis is usually seen alongside other valvular defects such as mitral stenosis and aortic regurgitation in the setting of rheumatic heart disease. Tricuspid stenosis causes impaired emptying of the right atria with right atrial dilation and signs of right heart volume overload but without impaired right ventricular function. And lastly, can you describe the clinical presentation, diagnosis, and management of tricuspid stenosis? Patients with severe stenosis present with signs and symptoms of right heart failure. Diagnosis is made through identifying the characteristic murmur on physical exam, which increases with inspiration or laying down, or the more nuanced changes to the jugular venous waveform. Treatment is largely medical therapy geared to improving the volume overload, such as fluid and salt restriction and diuretics, and treating other complications, such as atrial fibrillation. Tricuspid valve replacement is indicated for patients who do not respond to medical management alone. Armed with your newfound knowledge of tricuspid regurgitation and tricuspid stenosis, let's revisit our patient for the beginning of this episode. As you may recall, Jasper Thomas is a 32-year-old admitted yesterday with infectious endocarditis and the clinical signs and physical exam findings of tricuspid regurgitation. As you considered his case, you wondered, what is the physiologic basis for his murmur and the changes that occur with inspiration and leg raising? and what treatment would you recommend? In Mr. Thomas's case, it appears he has infective endocarditis of the tricuspid valve due to Staph aureus, the most common pathogen in this disease, as it colonizes and directly damages the tricuspid valve. This leads to dysfunction and incomplete closure of the valve and regurgitant blood flow into the right atrium, superior vena cava, and inferior vena cava. Any maneuver that increases venous return to the right heart, such as inspiration and leg raising, accentuates the murmur. For treatment, you recommend initiation of IV antibiotics and fluid and sodium restriction to address his shortness of breath and potentially impaired right heart function. If his symptoms of right heart failure worsen, a diuretic such as furosemide could be started as well.
And that's our show. Make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you like what you heard. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. And again, now is your chance to get 50% off the RX Bricks by following the link in the show notes below and typing in the promo code RXPOD, like RX Podcast. It's a huge discount on the written material that serves as the foundation of Audio Bricks, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already and help keep Audio Bricks free. Until next time, friends.